Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 36, Keeping Hold of the Silver Branch with Jenny Finn. Our guest, Jenny Finn, has designed structures that foster vitality in people, communities, and organizations for nearly 30 years. Her research, mentoring, and teaching invite people to deepen the relationship they have with themselves in order to serve the world with greater clarity and compassion. Jenny's work has taken many forms, including nonprofit leadership, trauma and hospice care, chaplaincy, clinical private practice, community building through the expressive arts, community and cultural design, and transformative education. Jenny holds a PhD in sustainability education and is the co-founder of Springhouse, an intergenerational vitality-centered learning community in Southwest Virginia. Before we immerse ourselves in today's episode, I wanted to let you know that the doors are now open for the 2026 edition of The Author's Knot. This is our intimate 10-month online writing program for thought leaders, memoirists, novelists, and heart-led visionaries, all working on a book or another big project. I say it that way because so often our ideas do want to take the form of that tried and true technology of the book. But sometimes you're like me, and the big project becomes something like a podcast. Our members are not only working on novels and memoirs, they're also developing long-term projects like Substack newsletters and performance pieces. The Author's Knot will help you strengthen your voice, clarify your message, deepen your craft, and truly commit to your creative work so you can bring the fullness of your vision to life. This will be the second year that I'm offering this program, and I'm grateful to say that 2025's program was a deep and nourishing success. Here's what one member says about her experience. Over the past year, I've had the honor and gift of being held within the Dríocht, that's the magic, of the Author's Knot. As both a masterful story weaver and a graceful space holder, Marisa creates an atmosphere that welcomes all stories and all aspects of the creative process with authenticity, integrity, and generosity. Those who gather within the Author's Knot become a community of artists aligned in shared values and creative purpose. Oh, I'm deeply grateful to receive those words and to share them with you. And I'd love to know if you'd like to join us. Many of our past members are signing up to join us for a second year, so space is definitely limited in the 2026 Author's Knot. It's a radical act to commit yourself to your words and your art. It takes devotion, and it takes real, focused support. And that's what I can offer you in this program. I hope you'll consider joining us. Find all the details about the Author's Knot, as well as the application, at marisagowdy.com. Well, I am so excited to welcome Jenny onto the podcast today. And as is our way on Knot Work, Myth, and Storytelling, we first ask the story to speak for itself, and then we'll explore all the ways that it resonates and matters for us today. So Jenny, will you tell us a story?
I will. I'm happy to. This is a condensed telling of an old Irish tale called The Voyage of Bran. One spring morning, Bran walked alone by the cliffs of his home. He walked for some time when suddenly he heard a sound behind him, a tune soft as wind through blossoms. This strange music followed him wherever he went, and as day turned to night, this music lulled the king to sleep. When he awakened, a silver branch lay in his hand, brought by a mysterious woman of song. This woman spoke an invitation to Bran. A branch of silver, fair and bright, born of dream and moonlit night. Cross the sea, O Bran the Brave, seek the land beyond the wave. Later that evening, as he feasted with his kin, a woman appeared before him, her cloak white as foam. She sang of an island beyond sorrow where time stood still. There is an isle across the sea where youth and joy will ever be. Come sail, O Bran, the shining way, where night is light and love is day. Moved by this song, Bran gathered his men, three nines in number, and set sail upon the open sea. For 2 days and two nights they rode through mist and starlight. Out of the mist, riding not on water but air, a chariot approached. It was Manannan Mac Lir, god of the sea. The god told Bran that where the men see the waves of the ocean, he saw rolling fields with flowers as far as the eye can see. After this encounter, Bran and his men reached an island where the people of that island laughed without end. One of Bran's men stepped ashore and laughed forevermore. At last they came to the land of women. The queen cast a shining thread that drifted through the air and caught Bran's hand. It drew his boat gently to the shore. Welcome, Bran, beloved guest. Time stands still where hearts find rest. Feast and dream and love the day. Here the years will drift away. They dwelt there for what seemed a year, but centuries passed outside of this timeless isle, and one man's heart longed for home. The queen warned, "You may go, but set no foot upon the land." Bran agreed, and they sailed back to Ireland. When they reached the shore, all was strange. The people there spoke of Bran as a legend. "We left the world of mortal clay to find the land where night is day. Now centuries have turned and gone. We ghosts return, but not for long." As they approached, and to Bran's dismay, one man leapt ashore. The instant his foot touched the soil, he crumbled to dust. With grief and confusion, Bran and his men left the shore and turned once more to sail the western sea.
Oh, Jenny, thank you for taking us on those ships and bringing us to the other world, and for bringing a story that you and I have both been treasuring so close to our hearts, even though we only just met a month ago. We've been traveling the same road together for some time. Thank you.
You're welcome. I know, so magical the story is and our sharing of it.
Yeah, yeah. So the silver branch has this otherworldly magic to it that also enables us to see this world as it is. Knotwork listeners would have heard me tell a version of this story over the summer. And you have so masterfully, condensed seems like a word that isn't beautiful enough, for maybe a distillation of really calling in the most potent parts of the story to communicate this really timeless and so timely bit of wisdom. So let's start here with what part of this story is most alive for you and most alive in you right now?
Yeah, this story, you know, it's the waking up, the waking up that the song, really the silver branch was just this representation of the wake up, you know, it's there in his hand. Like I've awakened to something. Not only have I awakened, I'm going to follow it. I'm going to follow it, even if it changes me, even if I can't go back to where I was, I'm going to follow it. And that part I know so deeply in my own heart, and my own soul, from my own journey of what it means to wake up to the gift of life, that there's more, kind of like the God of the sea was pointing to, like there's more than you can see here. Waking up to that kind of different, deeper, hidden design perspective and perception is something I'm so deeply familiar with and now committed. And I know that for me, it changed me. Just waking up to that perception and continues to change me in ways that there's no going back once I know it. And it is like when the man leapt upon the shore and crumbled to dust. There is a death and a grief in that, that there's no going back, and that change within me affects the systems that I'm a part of. And so that could be one of the reasons I might want to go back, because I don't want those things to change. And there's just, I can't go back. I think that's the part that resonates most with me, is both the incredible gift of waking up to the power and beauty of life, carrying that perception throughout my life, and the losses that have happened as a result of holding that silver branch in my hand.
Oh, beautiful. Contained in what you say too is this dance of that sort of that individual and the collective. And I'd love for you to talk more about the sense that this story obviously touches you at a deep, deep personal level, but it is part, it's a community project for you right now. And it really is holding so many people in so many ways. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I think I can start by telling that that story has to start with me and my own heart and why I'm sitting where I am. Having awakened to the gift of my life really young, I'm 55 now. And when I was 20, had a profound mystical experience where I was really knee-deep in my own alcoholism very young. I started drinking young. I come by it honestly in my family. And I was really not well. Sadly, that was kind of the norm that I had surrounded myself with also. So it was like, it wasn't even that noticeable that I was a mess. And there was one evening where I was out at a very large party, and from within I heard, "Put your drinks down. You will never drink again." And I've never had a drink since that day. It's been 35 years. So the wake up call was part of it. And that wake up call wouldn't have sustained if I did not choose to take care of it. And so it's just interesting how, even in the story, Bronn goes with a group. He doesn't try to sail that sea alone. He goes with a group. And I wouldn't have, like, that was just the beginning of my journey. And I had communities and mentorship and different practices around me to sustain what I was waking up to over all these years. And shortly after that experience, in my mid-20s, I was diagnosed with a very serious cancer, a lymphoma, that had me face to face with death in a way that only deepened my connection to what I had awakened to. So, with all of that said, I knew that in order to, the wake up is the mysterious part. Like, who knows why Bronn heard this singing? Who knows why? I've known many addicts who have died from their addiction. Why me? Why in that moment did I hear it? Why did Bronn hear it? I'll never know. I'll never know that. I'll really never know either why, as a 20, very stubborn, strong-willed 20-year-old that was pretty lost, decided to follow another path and sail my own seas in that way. I'll never know. But I know that I couldn't have sustained that wake-up call. The silver branch would have been a passing moment, and the perception wouldn't have continued to grow and deepen in me without the support of a community that shared my values, without the support of continuous mentorship over all these years, and new practices, something other than drinking, something other than escaping my reality. I had to find different ways of being present to myself and continue on that journey. So I think where I landed now was 12 years ago, I founded a place called Springhouse. And it's called Springhouse for a reason. It's here to protect, contain, and make useful the spring within every person, the source of life within every person, no matter what age they are. So we're an intergenerational community. And anyone who knows me and anyone who knows me here knows that the most important thing to me is that we stay connected to that source. And I know what it takes. And this dominant culture where we're running in so many ways, every social system we have supports a leaving of that source, including our educational system. And we must learn how to create the conditions to hear our own singing and then to follow it. And that is easy to tell that story, but to actually do it in a dominant culture where that is not our primary purpose, sadly, tragically, and we're experiencing the implications of that, we need more places across all ages to be able to practice fostering the conditions for people to hear their song, to hold that silver branch in their hand and follow it. They have to have the resiliency, the drive, the madness, really, to go on those seas.
Yeah.
And everyone here, no matter what their age is, knows that, that's what we're doing here. And so we're in the midst of, as part of what we do here, we have a school, kindergarten through 12th grade for young people. We have adult programming. We also have a community print shop, which emerged actually in Ireland. And that's a whole other, that whole thing emerged 3 years ago. It continues to surprise us. We wonder what we're doing, but we have a whole letterpress print shop inspired by the National Print Museum of Dublin and Liam, who's there. And it's there. And so we have an annual printing festival called a Ways Goose. And a Ways Goose celebrates the movement from printing by light to printing by candlelight. So what we're about this next weekend, we're about to have our third annual Ways Goose. And it will be celebrating our founding in Ireland. And so we're going to have Irish food. We've got an Irish band. I'm going to be singing. Some other Springhouse staff are going to be playing the boron and the banjo and all kinds of things. It's really, and then we're going to have this book printed about the Silver Branch, and we're calling it The Silver Branch Speaks. And the story that I just read is in that book. And a little kind of exploration of what we mean by the Silver Branch perception. And then stories are from this community are in those stories of people waking up.
Oh, waking up and staying awake, you know, because there's so much that you just offered us there. And the thing that I'm holding is that reminder and invitation to, if the silver branch is passed to you, if you happen to pick it up, the real change happens when we do not put it down again, because we don't pick up, instead of picking up the bottle or picking up the phone or picking up our kids, which, you know, there's those three things are not all the same, but you know, those, whatever that is that calls us out of that connection to source, as you name it. And what is it like to walk through life holding the branch? And then clearly what you're naming too is, and sometimes we forget, we might set it down, but someone beside us who is on a shared journey in the boat with us, we'll pick it up and say, hey, let me hold it for a while. Or you drop this, here you go. And I'm just so immensely touched by that. And it seems like such a powerful sense of constantly remembering, but without the pressure of you must remember. But instead it's that gift that remembering could be in calling yourself together. The other piece that touches me is, did you say you do the printing itself happens by candlelight?
Well, the celebration, so this is a 17th or 18th century, maybe 18th century tradition called the Ways Goose that celebrates at that time when there wasn't, you know, we didn't have, you know, we don't flip on a light switch. But they had an actual celebration with food and music and printing that celebrated that moment and that shift from light to candlelight. And so We used to light candles in our print shop, and now we don't, because we're scared that we will not remember we lit them. But the annual festival is really an honoring of, I would say, both the power of the printed word, I would say, and the power of what a light it can be in the dark, and how at the same time, it can also be, I mean, when we look at media today, can also be something that perpetuates the darkness and the lack of consciousness. For sure. So really, it makes sense as a place called Springhouse here. What we're really after, the people here, including myself, see that we live in a dominant culture that is in crisis. And we've all experienced the implications of that in different ways, to different degrees. And we're all people here who both have experienced and see that in our dominant culture and are very committed, no matter what, to blaze not really a new way, but an ancient way rooted in the wisdom of these kind of old tales, the wisdom of the living system of the earth. And to do our best to one day at a time experiment, what would it look like if we actually as a collective made our primary purpose taking care of the source of life in ourselves, in each other, and in the place that we live? What would that look like? So we've been around 12 years and really committing to that. And so it makes sense that we'd have a school, because that's where you would pass down a different way of living. We get to choose what we want to pass down. And we do here. And what we want to choose to pass down is, how do we lead the cultural renewal that we need at this time? How do we become those adults in the world? And we are thinking about that all the way down to when I'm looking at someone who's 5 or 6 years old, what do they need to know now in order to prepare themselves for that? And it makes sense that we'd have a print shop, because we print books about our design, about our curriculum, things like this Silver Branch Speaks and other things that inspire people to think beyond, kind of like the God of the Sea did, think beyond what you can see. And don't just stop there, but move toward like what Thomas Merton would call a hidden wholeness, the hidden design, the hidden wholeness at the center and creation of all creation. And so that takes a different kind of sight.
Beautiful. And that feels contained in that line, night is light and love is day, which is just such a gorgeous couplet, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that speaks to the tension of that paradox, right? Like there's times where, as one of the founders of this place, it's easy to want to find safety and like, oh, we're different and we're separate. And then the ego can often make that, and we're better. And because of the nature of this, there's a lot of vulnerability and fear, and because it's so unfamiliar, even within the realm of education. So the amount of resistance and criticism and all kinds of things that I've walked through in 12 years to hold on to something deeper as we move through takes quite a lot of discipline, I would say, to be able to stick with that.
And because I'm in a moment, I've shared with you, because I'm homeschooling my daughter, I've mentioned this on the podcast a couple of times, I'm stepping into that recognition of, we take a lot for granted in our culture in terms of how education ought to be done, is done, has always been done, and that it's very interesting to feel as if you're becoming immensely countercultural, perhaps even a little bit dangerous, by saying that particular system does not serve. In my case, I'm looking at it as an individual. And I realize that's kind of putting it into the negative, and you may reshape that in terms of how you're looking at creating a new system of schooling that has a more, I guess, generative spin. But I know for us, that sense of having, right now I'm in still that stepping away moment, in that unschooling moment, in that sense of just saying, in a way, it's assessing what damage has been done and doing some mitigation before creating again. But at the larger scale, I've had some fascinating conversations, mostly with family members, you know, around this. It was a choiceless choice for us in so many ways. But can I tell you, sitting down with my 103-year-old grandfather, who was an immensely lucid, with it kind of guy in so many ways, and explaining to him, you know, it's that the school systems aren't working for us right now. And then getting into some deep memories of Sister Philomena were pretty fascinating from, you know, 1929. But there's so much identity and wisdom and pain and possibility and futility wrapped up in even just one family story of how education has worked and should work. I'm just so endlessly intrigued by the work that you're doing on this broader scale.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's reminding me of of what I've been reading, but also conversations that I've had even up until this morning And it's reminding me of John Moriarty and his talking about the silver branch perception and what he means by that and how it's missing and we've lost it in our culture. And he used the words, we've lost it because of our continuous seeking of progress, rationalism, or intellectualism. And I added, and he said it in a different way, materialism, consumption. So, progress, you know, when I read the progress part, I've been also reading recently. So, I hold that word, just we'll hold that word, progress. And then I've been reading about how the discourse in education over the past 100 years or more has been around academic achievement. Achievement, let's just keep it at that word, achievement. It's been individualistic and it's been centered around achievement. And it has not been centered around human development, which has made us not well, not well. And not only is it important that we start tending to like an individual in their human development, but the individual, and this is why here we call it ecocentric human development, which is a word coined by Dr. Bill Plotkin. And he talks about how we have to situate the human being in the community and earth context that they're in, that we're part of a web of life, not above it, not above it. And so we are part of it. And when you start considering the community and the earth in human development, for me, it's like, of course, right? I mean, we are right, but we haven't done that. We haven't done that. We've separated out the individual. And how are we going to make this one person successful? Has really hurt us and has made us lose a lot of, you know, the silver branch perception, like I said, is really about being able to experience, like behold, he talks about beholding the world rather than just seeing it. 3, 4, 5D kind of design, not just 2D, where it's like an object and a subject. And so that takes time to cultivate the conditions in relationships over time to even move that practice, let alone discourse, from achievement and progress to actual ecocentric human development across from birth to death is such a different endeavor. And to me, that is what leads to being able to hold that silver branch and walk with it and hold it at all costs, no matter what the seas are that you're sailing. That you're holding on to that takes a wholly different curriculum and also invites a different kind of skill. When you were talking about from the story, day and night, light and day, like all of these different paradoxes that we encounter to be able to hold the tension of that is the only way we're ever going to be able to move toward a different way of living together that is more connected to the web of life, is more reverent of the source of life and all the ways it unifies and diversifies all of us. And so that just requires a different, it's a whole different reason for the thing, but we are immersed, enculturated in this progress, academic achievement thing, which I can say firsthand has hurt us and has hurt our children.
Oh, just the radical simplicity of what you're naming, of what John Moriarty named. And of course, his name had to, of course, come into this conversation because so Jenny and I actually first met at Kripalu up in the Berkshires early October on the invitation of Robert Mulhall, who was a guest on the podcast just a few weeks ago. And that was where we made this connection of, oh, we're both here carrying silver branches of our own, and they're gloriously similar. And it becomes, you know, you've experienced true and immediate intimacy with someone. When I passed Jenny my copy of Invoking Ireland by Moriarty, that was just so covered with all of my scribbles and all of my underlines. And it was like, well, you know, Jenny and I are now going to be friends for life because she has seen my most marked copy of any book I think I've read this side of college. So I'm just grateful to kind of be calling in the philosopher himself who really carried this story back to its original essence in this sense of that we need it most in modernity. Because, you know, everything you're naming, it's like it's It's the of course-ness of things. And we level on these other pieces of language and complication because that is what we are as humans. But if ultimately what we're seeking to do is hear the song of the branch being exactly what it is. And Moriarty goes deeper into explaining where it isn't just the branch, it's the everything. So every bush is the burning bush. And also the cow dung beside it is itself the cow dung. And that is just as awe-inspiring as the rainbow and as, you know, the newborn babe. And that living with the paradox of saying everything is on fire with, I want to say glory. And I don't know why I mean by that, but is that sense, because it, Chris Moriarty comes from a Christian tradition too. So glory would have a bit of that old Catholic sense that I would have learned in church as a child. But when everything is that, everything becomes sacred and we don't have to worry so much about the profane. But there might be a way too, when you're speaking about our over-acculturated sense, that we're getting probably a little too sanctimonious to get into the profanity of modern culture. But at the same time, there is that sense of like removing us from the earth, separating us from our roots and from one another and from everything that really is, and putting us into the machine and turning us into cogs. I mean, I right now am homeschooling an 11-year-old and I've got an 11th grader who is so firmly embedded in the achievement system as it is. And it's not the right move to take her out of it, but the amount of mitigation we need to do in order to help her survive and for her survival as at a very high level, because she has taken that achievement thing into her bones. It's again that naming of the paradox of the sense of like, how am I holding these two absolute extremes within one family? Mm-hmm. And yet it feels like exactly indicative of what so many of us are doing as we are engaging in deep culture work and putting our hands in the soil and being in beloved community. And then also, whether it's going to a job where we're treated like cogs or we're having to put our kids into school systems that neither see them as individuals nor as community members, we're always living in that in between. And so I'm just, every time I hear you speak of Springhouse and your ideals there and the lived reality of that, it's that calling out for yes of what is it like to be in integrity and alignment at a broader scale.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. Mm. I mean, that's the question for me is that I'm living into every day. Mm. And it is not for the faint of heart to walk this journey. Mm. So yeah, I think to be able to see the flame, the spring within everything, the hidden design, is a developmental state where in order for that kind of perception to be sustained throughout the course of my life takes intention and support that I don't know, even within, I mean, my background first was in kind of the mental health arena. And even there, I mean, the level of self-care of people who are practicing is not super strong. Mm-hmm. I still mentor a lot of people who are graduate school students in the field of social work, and people are in survival mode. Mm-hmm. They are absolutely in survival mode. And from survival mode, you can only be so creative and you can only see so far. Right. And so this deepening of, like, I had to live my life intentionally with support to allow that flame in me to grow so that when I looked through my eyes, I could begin to see that design that I knew in me around me. So to ground that in an example and not be abstract, I think about, there was a moment where after I had cancer, you know, ever since then, that's been 30 years, and I have gone in for regular testing yearly, waiting for biopsies and tests. Like, that is just, that has worked me, worked me over the past 30 years, been a burden and a blessing. Mm-hmm. And I can remember midway in that journey, maybe 15 or so years ago, I was going in for a chest x-ray, which was part of my protocol. And I went in and I was like, oh my God, this is depressing. Like, this hospital is depressing.
Yeah.
This is not a healing place. I mean, even though the people were lovely, they were lovely, but I'm like, this is not oriented around healing. I don't know what this is oriented around, but it does not feel like anywhere my body wants to be for very long.
Right.
And I walked into the room where, if anyone's ever had a chest x-ray, like you have to kind of wrap your arms around this machine. And then you stand with your arms up, but then there's a point where you have to wrap your arm, like you're hugging this machine. And I remember facing the machine and being like, this is awful. This is just an awful metal disaster of a thing before me. And I felt scared. I felt lonely. And in that moment, I started to pray and I asked my source, like, will you help me see this differently? Will you help me see this differently? And that is when I heard from within, like, see yourself as hugging this, not as just enduring it, not just as making it through, that you're actually bringing the light and love you know within you to this very place.
Yeah.
So that when the next person comes in and they're standing at this machine and they're likely scared and they're likely lonely and lost and feel the same thing probably you feel in here, that maybe there'll be a little left over for them so that they can take on a little bit of magic of that perception of something deeper. That's the result of not only waking up with the silver branch in my hand, but doing everything I can to keep it in my hand, and growing it has only led to a deeper and deeper perception of the world. And so I can imagine, and I've mentored many, many people over the course of these years, and I know it can be frustrating. It's like, well, I want that. I want to be able to see the burning bush and everything. And it can't be forced. I don't even know if it really can be taught. Practices can be taught to stay close to the moment. But then it's the tenacity and the discipline that, and the desire to stay in relationship with that deeper perception. I could never have done that on my own. I needed other people, like you said, that are like, hey, you forgot your stick, you know, here's your stick. Or my mentor, my mentors, many mentors who have been getting to know that branch for a long time and are wizards and wizardresses in their own right. And so to watch them live from the silver branch has taught me, like, oh, it showed me what's possible. And I'm so grateful for that, for the communities that handed me my stick back and didn't try to be the stick, didn't try to be the branch, didn't try to kid me. Nope, this is your branch and it's up to you to take care of it. Wow. I'm still in a community. I mean, Springhouse is that one of the communities for me that does that and that I do for others. And it's not easy. It's not easy to cultivate that perception, but it's doable.
Yes. And that feels like, I mean, we could go on for hours, but that feels like sort of the ultimate blessing place. And I thought, oh, this has just lit so much inside of me that's new, but also that deep sense of soul recognition of like, oh, yes, this feels like a way that I know deep in my bones. And it's the answer to so much of the yearning.
Thank you.
Jenny, thank you. Are there any last words, a blessing, an invitation you might want to offer as we say farewell?
I think my blessing is for us to remember that what we go so far and wide seeking is right here. It's right here. We're not missing anything. We're just returning to a wholeness that lives deep within the design of this life. There's nothing missing. And it's really about uncovering and discovering and just committing to that journey.
Beautiful. That feels like universal soul wisdom, and also so important to those of us in the Irish diaspora who may often feel the yearning to stand on that beach where Bran sailed back to, but knowing we're carrying that within us. Oh, Jenny, thank you so much for your time, for your wisdom, for your insight, for showing us how to hold the branch.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.